There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, hour number two. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday. And by the way, if you didn't catch last hour, or if somebody's talking to you about it, that was an hour with Public Safety Director of the City of Mobile, James Barber. That will be up on our podcast page, fmtalk1065.com, probably sometime this hour. It'll get posted, and you can check it out there. Download it by going to podcast on the front page of fmtalk1065.com. Check it out right there. Plus, if you subscribe, which is the best way, at iTunes, or if you're a like an old fogey Android user like me, you use Stitcher. It's a great app. Like someone who stitches, it's called Stitcher. You can use that app to just get them just like iTunes, but for Android folks on our phone, or Spotify, or the TuneIn Radio app that you use to stream the station on your smartphone also has our podcast there as well. Hey, speaking of Apple, Dalton, can you explain what happened to me, not to happen to me, but can you explain to me what happened yesterday? There's the big Apple announcement, and there's a, it's a big change, Apple's, and I really, maybe I've just gotten too old. I don't exactly get what they're doing here. I mean, they're, is it banking, or is it, I mean, as he comes in with, is that an Apple product? No, that's a Dell you brought in. You got rid of that Apple
product. Yeah, I've moved on.
Yeah, you could thank you. You'd be in an old band now. You're a dad, so you get, you get a Dell. You don't get Apple anymore. Now, what happened yesterday? What did Apple announce?
Well, they announced a lot of things. And like we're used to seeing from these big Apple conventions, reveals that they have, they normally reveal products.
Yeah,
like new iPads, yeah. Cheaper iPhones.
The watches, like you got
the
on.
The watches, yeah. I haven't moved on from the Apple Watch, but this was a little different yesterday because they actually announced that they're moving strongly into services. And I watched the video where they supercut all of the times that Tim Cook and other people that got on the stage said the word services. But that was their main and only push yesterday, were all of the services that they're now offering. And the one that had the biggest news is that Apple is now going to have a credit card.
Apple Card, right?
An Apple Card. So they've had Apple Pay on the phones and iPad and on MacBooks for a while now, where you input your debit card or credit card information.
Yeah, like iTunes, you go, you know, if I go to buy me a new Tyler Childers song, it says, hey, do you want to agree to buy this thing for $1.29 or something?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Like that, except you have the cards kind of in a wallet on your phone. It loads your hard, like the cards you carry in your wallet. You put the information in there or take a picture of the card, and it loads it into your Apple wallet. And then with different places where they take Apple Pay and take mobile pay, you can just pay using your phone, and the funds come out of that debit card or credit card that you loaded there. But this is different because now Apple will offer their very own credit card.
You know, the thing about loading them on your phone, if everybody in the world used that, that'd be fine. But in reality, it's just kind of a, oh, isn't it cool technology, because the other place, you still have to carry your wallet with your cards in it.
Right.
So now you just have two platform. You know what I'm saying? It's not like it saves you carrying a
wallet.
Well,
what Apple's doing here is the Apple Card you get through them, and they announced all of the different, I think there's no sign-up fee, there's no annual fee for the Apple Card, but they actually send you a hard card also to keep in your wallet, so you can use it. You don't only have the phone to use your Apple Card. You can use the phone, but you can also use the card as you would normally use a credit or debit card.
Is this Apple going the way of Google? I mean, I'm looking at this because, not that Apple hasn't been in the services side, and you talk about the Apple Pay, and look at iTunes. They were brilliant when Apple is seen as a maker of hardware. But in reality, I bet you there's a bunch of the money that comes into the company is in the music side and the movie and the street, you know, I mean, the downloading. So that's huge. So they'd already diversified some, but compared to Google that is in every... Google does, I mean, what are they not in?
Right. They're in okay. They have their hand in every pot.
So you look at Apple now, they're kind of opening up their... They're expanding as a finance company.
Exactly. And they're using Goldman Sachs. They teamed up with Goldman Sachs to get this
done.
Who
we bailed out, right?
And they're kind of, you know, taking all of the finance apps and mashing them into this service that they're going to provide with the card. Because if you use Apple products and you use the Apple card, then whenever you spend on that card... First off, it'll give you notifications, like like you can set up for your cards that you have used in your Apple phone. But also, it will go ahead and categorize what you spent, where you spent money. Like, if I go up the street and spend money in Walgreens, it'll go ahead and put that in my budget that I can look at on a daily, weekly, monthly basis and see
like
where
Mint,
my money's going.
Like Mint, there's some companies out there that have offered software I've looked at before, budgeting software. Mint was one of them, but I know it's just one of them.
Yeah, exactly like Mint. And I've used Mint a whole lot in the past. And it takes it and it tells you where your money's going. I don't know if they have something where you put goals there yet. I'm sure they do, where you could say, well, I only want to spend $50 this each week going out and eating. That's all I want, is one meal out, and then it tells you if you went over your budget or not. That's what Mint does. I'm not sure if Apple's will do that, but the phone is supposed to be a big deal. I'm not sure the interest rates or anything like that yet, but I do know they said there's going to be 0% annual fee and 0% sign-up fee. And,
but they're moving. I mean, they're moving from a technology company, even though Goldman Sachs, into a finance company. They're going to be making. They're going to be making money off interest.
Yeah, they are. And Apple's vice president.
That's not as flashy as rolling out, like you said at first, the new whatever.
No, but they've also rolled out the new whatever to go alongside this. As far as the interest rates, the VP of Internet Services, she said, our goal with Apple. With the Apple card is to provide each customer with an interest rate which is the lowest in the industry. But you know what credit card company doesn't say that they want to offer the lowest interest rate in the industry. So that was probably the biggest storyline from their reveal,
which is weird, man, because usually you're talking about a watch or a bigger phone or a smaller tablet.
Check out this new screen. You know, I haven't seen anything from Apple. I'm sure they have something in the work, but the next big hardware to come out will be the foldable phones.
Yeah, okay, I've seen this and it bothers me because I see when they fold the screen, I think it's about to break and it doesn't.
Yeah, and I don't know what kind of material they're putting them in there. Someone that's listening probably knows a lot more about these than I do, but they're... And you think foldable phone like the old Motorola Razors or something like that.
Flip phone,
like small, but the ones I've seen are tablet-sized when they're unfolded. And then when you fold them, they're big enough to fit. They still fit in your pocket, but they're still pretty big from what I've seen.
Y'all, if y'all hadn't seen this, Google it and go look because Google Apple. But Google Apple.
Google Apple. That's probably, they'll probably have a search engine before long. I wouldn't doubt it.
Wow.
I don't know why they would need to. But.
Well, I mean, because they want to do like Google and be in everything. But yeah, y'all look at it and it looks like a regular screen. And then they bend it. You're like, oh, you can't do that. It doesn't break.
It's not like, what was it, the Samsung phones that, no, actually it was Apple phones that were bending that weren't supposed to bend, one of them that they came out with. But a couple of the other things they announced, Apple TV Plus. So they've had Apple TV for a while.
Right, yeah.
And the streaming box is actually called an Apple TV. I've had one
of
those.
We got one in our house. I don't know how to use the thing, but it's the wife and children do.
And it kind of combines all of the streaming services you're signed up with and the movies that you can rent through Apple, like pay-per-view movies, and it puts them all on one screen for you, except Netflix, which they still don't have Netflix on their main Apple TV screen. But if you use Hulu, the HBO stream, Showtime, any of those, wherever you leave off watching, it'll say continue watching, and you don't have to flip between the apps using Apple TV. Well, now they've updated that service, and you can pay for a video service called Apple TV Plus, and they're moving into the content creation.
Well, that's what I was about to say. There's the thing. So it's chicken and the egg, and I'll tell you, whatever technology changes, which it does quite rapidly, what is the same is content. You got to have something. And Netflix, we saw this when they grew this company. They made huge leaps when they started saying, and, hey, we're going to produce our own content. And you're like, come on, you're just there to facilitate other people's content. Mm-hmm. It's been huge for them.
Yeah, and they've made a lot of money off of their original content. And this is, I think, Apple directly competing or trying to keep up with Amazon, because the Amazon Prime, you're able to watch shows that they've bought the rights to that have aired on other networks, but they've also done a lot of their own original content.
And so when do we not, there's not going to be, you know, CBS, NBC, ABC, there's going to be Google Channel, there's going to be Google, not channel, but Google, Netflix, mm-hmm. Apple.
Yeah, and we were already seeing them buy up shows that have been canceled on networks, and a lot of these shows get a second afterlife because they are cult favorites whenever they aired on whatever Friday night at 6:30 p.m. on right. NBC, and then they go away because they weren't getting the numbers that they need to keep advertisers on a big channel like that.
Which y'all don't, if y'all don't know, that you have almost no chance with your show if you're on it Friday night at 6:30.
No, because everyone's going out and spending their $50 of budget that they've put into the Mint and right. Apple Card. But some of these get a second afterlife, and then everyone starts streaming them when they start seeing about them online. And then now Netflix, Amazon, and soon to be Apple, they'll be able to buy these shows and start running them as their own original content. So that's Apple TV Plus. And the other thing that I know a lot of journalists, local journalists, are worried about is the Apple News subscription, where you can get a lot of magazines. I think you pay $9.99 a month, and you get, I think, 30-something magazines, Rolling Stone, Sports Illustrated, a lot of those were included in there. But they also have the LA Times, maybe the Wall Street Journal, right. And you get them all in this one news app, and you can flip between magazines or just see a line of stories from all of these different, a lot like Google News, like you see when
they're
you
trying to be Google.
News.google.com. So that's kind of what they did. Services.
All right. Well, thank you for the update there, because I knew they did something, but I wasn't quite sure what it was.
Like Oprah said, her main selling point was a billion pockets, y'all. So people that are trying to jump on board Apple would do so because they're already in a billion pockets.
That's significant.
Yeah, pretty big deal.
Yeah, especially with you fold your phone and put it in your pocket. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Somebody asked here, what's my take on Senator Jones' vote? You know, it's interesting. We'll talk about Senator Doug Jones' vote on the Green New Deal. You're damned if you do and damned if you don't. Once again, I think he's a one-term, or not even full-term, senator. But at the same time, you got to understand there's some strategy here. Even though I see the ads that they're running, fundraising ads with Doug Jones outside the market, I get it. Listen, I get the politics of this, but specifically to this one item. Okay, so Senator Jones voted no yesterday about the Green New Deal proposal, okay? And there's, once again, in deference to y'all, you know, that are, not, I didn't say conservatives, I said Republican card-carrying members here, they're like, I can't believe it. If he would have voted yes for the Green New Deal, you'd have lost it too. He voted no. And it's the whole thing. We talked to Jeff Poore this morning about it because he looked at Chuck Schumer and gave him a shrug like, sorry, dude, I can't vote for this. And then people are making a bunch of, hey, I don't, like, which one? He has to do one or the other, right? I guess you can vote present. But difference is, once again, this is not a rah-rah-rah on Senator Doug Jones. Lord knows, and he is good about coming on the air with us, but every time he comes on, I think he's coming on in 2 weeks or something like that, we'll have something big to disagree about. But at the same time, I mean, I think you're chasing a red herring tied to a rabbit here when you're getting on Senator Jones's case for voting no on AOC's Green New Deal proposal. Yes, the Green New Deal proposal wasn't going anywhere. It's all for show, although it shows a direction that there are a lot of Democrats, I don't think a majority yet, but a lot of them in Washington that are all on board this, which is, you know, as much a socialist agenda as it is an environmental agenda. But he voted no, and he's still getting flack. I'm sorry, believe me, there's all kind of stuff that votes that Doug Jones takes that as a conservative or, you know, card-carrying Republican, you can rip on. But when he votes the way a Republican senator would have, maybe I'm missing something. I'm just generally confused. It's I see a lot of people from the right to tear him up for his no vote. He voted against what Chuck Schumer wanted. What else do you want the guy to do on that in that individual case? Go find one of the many, many other things that we can have beef with on the votes from Senator Jones. Which, by the way, if you heard Jeff this morning, the interesting components here of people who could be getting in the race for Senate 2020. Of course, the first announced, first in, AL1's congressman running for Senate, Bradley Byrne. And you have some other names in the mix, but one of the ones that I thought was interesting is another congressman from the state, and one who could be in a situation down the road if Alabama loses a congressional district. Not saying that he couldn't win, but he's going to have to face, Alabama could lose a congressional district, and like musical chairs, one of the reps could be out of a gig and have to run for the newly defined district that would encompass where they live. But one that gets a lot of attention, he's been on the show with us. He was on the show the day he was at the practice field when the dirtbag started shooting at the Republican members of Congress that were out practicing, and that's Mo Brooks. I think it will be, from an armchair, political armchair, it'll be interesting to see how the state splits if Representative Mo Brooks decides to throw his hat in the ring and run for Senate as well. Then you'll have two of the biggest, if not the two biggest names of our contingent to Washington on the representative side that will be running for Senate. And of course, as we can see here in the void left by the announcement of Congressman Byrne that he's running for Senate, there's a lot of people in the mix and interested in running for AL1, and there'll be a similar deal up in AL5. All right, a couple things I want to get to. And coming up in the second half of this hour, Cam Marston, his show What's Working, airs every Wednesday night at 6, and he's going to talk about education going forward, our children, getting our children ready for the jobs of tomorrow, but they don't know what those jobs are. It's an interesting discussion that he kind of laid out what they're going to talk about on tonight's show, and do that with the headmaster over at St. Paul's, and it's Blair Fisher is going to talk with him. But it's this idea that you got to educate children, but we're not sure what the jobs are going to be that are waiting for them, and how do you do that? And maybe this is a good tie-in here, actually, with the story that when this, I don't know, Dalton, 6 o'clock hour, I think early this morning, we get the show started, the morning show. Story pops up that shows McDonald's is going to use AI to tweak their drive-through menus. And I said, this is more of what I've talked about. If you have a job that's predictable and symmetrical, you may not have that job in a decade or two. Listen to this. The folks over at Engadget.com have the story up, but it's a lot of different places. It says, when you roll up at McDonald's drive-through in the near future, you might notice the menu changing while you're ordering to persuade you to buy a few more items. Now, this is an interactive menu. Fast food giant is buying machine learning startup Dynamic Yield, so they're a startup AI company, for a reported $300 million. And the first stop for the company's AI is going to be the drive-through window. The system will look at factors such as the weather, time, local events, traffic levels at the restaurant and on nearby roads, historical sales data, currently popular items, and even what you're ordering to optimize the menu display that you see. It will be changing as you're sitting there. I'm just trying to get them to have the light on at the place I stop in the morning to get breakfast sometimes so I can see the menu. But this one will change as you look at it. McDonald's and the AI. How about that? All right. Coming back, Cam Marston joins us right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. Good to talk to my buddy Cam Marston. Of course, the show tonight, What's Working, with Cam Marston, oddly enough, the host and the name brand here, as we talk about what is working And let's see, you were, can we talk some like outside the show stuff for a second?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you know, one of your gigs is you speak to, and this is what you do. This is what led you, I guess, to doing the show What's Working. But you speak to big companies, medium-sized companies about workforce development trends out there, correct?
That's correct. That's the focus of the research is workplace and workforce trends, and it is that focus, that research that's gotten me involved in the show that is on your station.
Did you get a Cheerios hat?
I did. I was with General Mills yesterday.
He got a Cheerios hat.
Yeah. It just says Cheerios. They've got a swag department in the... I was in their world headquarters yesterday in Golden Valley, Minnesota.
Oh.
And they gave me a Cheerios hat and my own Wheaties box with my photo on it.
Y'all gotta see... It was cool. I saw that and I said... Man, I want one of those.
I walked into that swag office, and I mean, they've got everything that they manufacture in freezers and coolers and all over. And I thought, I just want a Cheerios hat. I didn't even know they were a thing. 10 million boxes of Cheerios I've bought and eaten over my life, I deserve a hat. And I said,
Did you have to turn in a UCP symbol to get the hat?
I didn't, but I know what you're talking about. That's a good reference. I told the guy that was giving me the tour, I said, can we come back here so I can get a Cheerios hat? And after my presentation, he gave me the hat. Like, man, this place is awesome.
And your Wheaties box with you on it?
Yeah, with me on it. Yeah, and I look good on that box.
Pretty good. Did you impress the kids when you came home with that? So, look here, Dad.
Yeah, what is Wheaties, Dad? And why are you on the cover? I'm like, this is on the mantle. This is mantle material right here.
Yeah.
And now kids were... unimpressed.
Unimpressed. Well, I'm jealous. So that helps even out some. But we are, tonight, you're talking about kids as well. You're talking about trends. This is all coming together and what's working tonight.
I find the changing demands of the workplace today. That's where my focus is. Mm-hmm. And if you hear the trends of recent shows, you'll hear my questions are driving that way. But the changing demands of the workplace has landed in tonight's show with this question: how are we educating kids for the jobs of tomorrow that, frankly, we can't even describe yet? We don't even know what they are. Every time technology advances another level, it creates a need for jobs that right now, as you and I sit here, we can't even predict what those jobs will be. So how do we educate a workforce, today's youth, to be ready to jump into the jobs that we can't yet define? In other words, we're educating people for an unknown quotient down the road. So my guest in the show tonight is Blair Fisher. Blair is the head of school at St. Paul's, and I've asked him to be a part of this interview because Blair comes from Charlotte, North Carolina. And in Charlotte, one of the things I've learned is that they're very competitive in the independent school market in Charlotte over curriculum, meaning parents shop curriculum. And in order for these schools to continue to do well, they've got to continue to push the curriculum forward.
Like a college would? Like, hey, we're more of this kind of school or that kind of school?
The answer to that is, here is the way kids learn today. Here's what science says kids are learning like today. Therefore, we've got to develop curriculum that meets the needs of kids today. So when St. Paul's hired Blair, they were aware of his capability and his victories in Charlotte of developing cutting-edge curriculum, and said, we want you here, and brought him into Mobile at St. Paul's. I know this about Blair, so I reached out to him to say, tell us about this curriculum and what it means for the workplace in the future, and that's tonight's show.
Okay, so this is going to be important, obviously for parents. I mean, there's the simple one, but for business owners as well going forward, to know that there's going to be, because their business, their individual business may change, the whole marketplace may change. Where are you going to get the people to come staff these jobs? That, once again, you put out this premise that we don't know what those jobs are, Camp, right? We don't know the jobs, but we're going to train children to be ready when they're adults to do them.
There's a couple comments there. Number one, we need to train kids to learn. We need to teach them how to learn. So while they're in school, this is according to Blair, while they're in school, they are definitely learning something for the purpose of a test.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, they're learning how to learn. They're learning how to master subject matter and apply it in the schooling environment. So outside of school, when they've graduated, gone into whatever the next level of their career is, they know the processes of learning, can capture those processes as they continue to grow up and reutilize them over and over again. So one of the things Blair will say, or Blair and I have talked about in the past, and I'm confident he will mention, is that They don't leave school finished. There is no product. In other words, we don't push kids out of school today as a finished product. We give them the tools needed to move forward and teach themselves over and over. And the workplace of the future is going to demand a employee who can learn and relearn and relearn and apply this new learning all along the way.
We see that. You see that in adult population right now. I mean, people who may say, I'm working in this field over here. Of course, my degree or what I studied was this over there. It has nothing to do with this, but they had the ability to learn the new task.
And it is a connection of two non-related things. That's one of the things that the workforce of the future, as I read in my stuff and that I'll ask Blair about tonight, is looking for is the ability to combine two disparate ideas to create a new opportunity. So the employees in any workplace today are becoming more and more valued in their ability to see opportunities outside their own workplace. And the ability to see the opportunities, whether it's new creative ideas, new processes, a sales opportunity, whatever it may be, is largely being driven by understanding and having knowledge of two seemingly disparate ideas that they can put together and create opportunity. So the employer of the future is saying, I'm not looking for somebody specifically skilled on this. I need somebody who understands this and then can apply it to something else down the road.
I wonder if there's the seesaw's moving because of this. As the business world becomes more based in robotics, to stick with this, or you know, AI or anything like that, we have more mechanization, more robotics, then they need less of that from the human beings and need them to be asymmetric. As you know, the old idea that I want somebody who's skilled, like you just said, they're this player on the football field, they are a defensive lineman or they're a quarterback, the days of that are, we have automation to do those things. And so as that gets bigger, I wonder if that pushes a lesser desire for that kind of specific task oriented student and then employee.
They are going to, according to the hypothesis, and this is part of the conversation I'll have with Blair, it's going to create a demand for more liberal arts degrees, mm-hmm. for better communicators, better team players, more supportive and encouraging team players. It's going to create a demand for managers and leaders who are better at encouraging and supporting and congratulating learners in their workplace. So yeah, the day of the guy who goes to the, let's take an over-the-top example, the assembly line and puts a rivet in all day long. Well, for some time, you're going to need to learn to put the rivet in so that you can train the machine to put the rivet mm-hmm. in. Once the machine learns how to do it, you're going to need to teach your team how to conduct the machine, how to work with the machine, and then you're going to move on to a different machine that's going to do something completely different and build a whole new team at that point. So it's the adroit movement and working amongst other people, as well as the broad liberal arts, using the true term of liberal arts,
right.
Free thinking,
right,
pulling together ideas, and better communicators.
Now, this kind of goes back to it. Yeah, go ahead.
When I entered the workplace back in the day, right, about 19, I graduated from college in 1991,
mm-hmm.
I was a liberal arts major for two reasons. One, I found it interesting, and my two, parents said, you got 4 years. After yeah. that, we're done.
Right.
We're done paying for this. And
right.
So I got out in four with a liberal arts degree. But it was hard to find a toehold in the marketplace with such an ambiguous degree.
Mm-hmm.
They needed accountants. They needed pre-law. They needed a lot of this stuff that I didn't have. I loved my education. It did not have immediate and quick application into the workplace. According to the stuff I'm reading about the future of the workplace, these broad-based learning, traditional, historical, liberal arts degrees are going to see an increase in value not too long from now.
All right, come back, because I want to talk about this, because this goes back to a conversation I've had over the years, too. What are you educating the children to do? A specific task, or like you said, being able to learn? It's a subject they're talking about tonight on What's Working, 6 o'clock, right here at FM Talk 106.5, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. My buddy Cam Barson and host of What's Working, that you can check out 6 o'clock tonight in studio with me. And they can also check it out in podcast form at their leisure.
That's correct. CamMarston.com, CamMarston.com. Across the top of the screen is the podcast link, and you can click on it, and there are several options on how and where to listen and how to subscribe and how to send it to your friends.
All right, but if you want to hear it fresh tonight at 6, your guest is?
A guy named Blair Fisher. Blair is the head of school at St. Paul's. It is not a St. Paul's show. It is an education trends show, and I dig deep into what teachers are having to learn in order to teach, how students are changing, all things of that nature in order to understand how our workforce today, our workforce rather, tomorrow of tomorrow is being prepared today.
Yeah, and what you said is the jobs that our children or the workforce of tomorrow will be doing, we can't even future think it.
There are people out there right now that are social media managers.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago, we didn't know what a social media manager was.
Right.
There are people out there who are listening right now whose job is a Google AdWords salesperson. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, 15, whatever it is, we didn't know what that was. As technology continues to advance, it creates needs for jobs that we don't know until the technology is ready.
And you talked about those thinkers that can combine disparate things. I guess they can figure out, hey, we've got this internet. Hey, we've got this need for advertising.
Yeah. And they can put these ideas together to create new opportunities. And that's where the predictions are education is going to be most fruitful, is creative thinkers who have a basis of knowledge, whether it be multiplication tables, fundamental mm-hmm. knowledge that you and I have learned growing up, that can take the fundamental knowledge, understand it, and apply it in unique and new ways, whether it be... And one of the predictions that I see is some of the most valuable people entering the workplace will be a combination of, let's say, STEM background mm-hmm. education and, let's say, an art history major or a English lit major. Really random and weird combinations of expertise that gives them a unique way of seeing the world. And the employers out there will say, I need somebody to reevaluate my marketplace and see opportunities that I can't see. And they're looking for that type of education. They will be looking for that type of education.
And usually those aren't, in the past, they have not been in the same building or under the same roof.
That's right. That's right. And we've seen this combination occur in many different places. As we talk about big breakthroughs in history or technology or whatever, it's two random people meeting over a picnic table at the corporate offices, mm-hmm. and they just happen to mention what they're both working on, and they begin to talk with one another. Now we're trying to train that formally.
And that's been maybe not a top of the stack debate, but one I've had in the past with different ideas of education. This is not even recently. This is over decades. This idea of what the job of a school system is.
Yeah.
And this has been a debate state to state, school system to school system, whether they'll say, well, it's preparing our children. Okay, and they will all say the same thing, but for what? And, you know, I've always been a proponent of teaching, of thinking. I'm thinking you're saying learning, but I've being independent thinkers, critical thinkers, and I think with that you still have to know your basics, but beyond that, critical thinking takes you a long way in this world. At the same time, you get some ideas and some educators over past that have said, listen, there are these holes that need filled in our economy, and our job is to make sure that these children are the best suited to fill those holes in the economy. But you're saying we don't know what those holes are going to be.
We can't even predict what those holes are going to be.
How can you train? I mean, that does this upend that whole idea of that kind of education?
I think if we teach kids how to learn, how to be satisfied with learning, and executing on what they learn, then it begins to plug those holes. Not saying we need a widget filler or a riveter.
But we have been in that world.
But we have been in that. And we needed that, perhaps, in the Industrial Revolution, and that's sure. where it began, and it continues to go on in their people. And interestingly enough, one of the things I'm going to talk to Blair about is he tells us teachers are categorically, he said, research backs this up, some of the most change-averse people in our society today.
Uh-oh.
So we've got this urgent demand for change being pushed on a resistant audience, an audience extraordinarily resistant to change. It creates a collision.
But could we argue that maybe coming from the education of education, that the new crop, the new teachers filling in the system will have that the same way we're teaching the students to be thinkers and change? I wonder if the educators of the future will be better suited to do that. Nothing against educators that aren't brand new. I'm married to one, so I'd be careful here. Yeah.
Educators are attracted to that job. People are attracted to the jobs of educators who are naturally change averse. So to say,
this is a tough. That's a tough.
So we're in a conundrum, right? And interestingly, Blair, who's talking about the change, the you know, future of education,
right,
has to become this manager that we talked about in the previous segment of encouraging, of pushing people to learn, of pushing people to change. He's talking about the future of the workplace and how people are going to have to do this. Well, he's having to do it right now.
He has a specifically, by definition here, change-averse group of staff.
Yeah,
the faculty that he has to get ready to be completely 180 and teach these children in a different way.
That's right, because the learning trends, the brain trends, what we continue to know about the brain changes, he's got to get people out of their habits. And man, it's not an easy task. And again, I said this in our previous segment, this is not a St. Paul show. This is an education, right, student youth show. And one of the things that, now, we mentioned again in the previous segment, I do a lot of presentations for big corporations with General Mills yesterday. Boys, the epidemic, the plague of boys in our society today. Our education system, the pendulum has swung way in the favor of girls. Now, there are people out there that are going to disagree with me. 70% of the graduates out there in graduate school are female. Mm-hmm. Yet at the same age, it's a favor of male, 51% to 49% of the population.
Wow.
The classroom, the methodologies of the classroom, the elimination of recess, the predominance of female teachers, particularly the absence of male teachers at the middle school and earlier age, has led to the favoritism. Nah, that's a poor term. Has led to a bias towards women, girls, in schooling. And the boys nationwide are falling behind. And I get the questions when I was with General Mills. Hey, can you help me understand what's going on with my son? He's 26, 28 years old. Doesn't really know what he wants to do. Didn't really want to finish his degree. He's kind of wandering. He has no passion, no drive. And that is a cause that is being started due to the way fundamental education that we're talking about is being delivered today.
And you're saying this is backed up with research, not just anecdotal? Because, yes. I mean, we can anecdote this thing all
we
day long.
We can anecdote it right all day long, but this is bona fide stuff. Yes, yes, that the boys are falling behind nationwide.
So what do you do if this system right now is working for girls? Is it a zero-sum game? Does it have to not work for females to be able to work for males?
You go to the female teachers and say, listen, it's not a crime to be a boy, and this is the way they behave. There's physiological differences between the two. We can't say that they should behave this way. This is the way boys behave.
I agree.
We're
going to
give them space to do that. It is not a crime. And if they're going to act out, if they're going to burst out and you know, not without raising their hand, we're not going to punish them for that. We're going to give them space to do that. We're going to try to curb this behavior a little bit.
Right.
But it is not a crime when there are true physiological differences between boys and girls for those physiological differences to come out any given point in the day. It is not their fault. We got to let this thrive because, let's face it, they're falling behind. Look at a picture right now. Go find someone somewhere of the National Honor Society at any school around
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm.
I bet it's a 4-to-1 female-to-male ratio. Does it mean that the boys are dumber? No. It means that they can't get a toehold in society and in schooling today.
So we ask that question tonight. How do you fix that?
You become aware of it, number one. You become you make sure the teachers are aware of this, number two. And you say to them, yeah, they're harder to discipline. They're a little bit squirrely. They're a little bit crazy. But it is not a crime to be a boy. Leave them alone.
Very good. That'll be tonight, 6 o'clock, What's Working with Cam Marston, who has his own Cheerios hat.
That's right. That's right.
Which should just get you some cred.
From the headquarters, by the way. From the headquarters.
Insanely jealous of that. And remind folks, the website, if they want to get podcasts or more information about you, where do they go?
CamMarston.com. You'll find that podcast link at the top of the page, as well as you can find the inventory of all the other shows there. And click on that link, and you'll be off to the races.
Great stuff. Thanks, man.
Thank you, man.
All right. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. Y'all have a great one.